This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Meera Sivasuthi. The Global Stroke Bill of Rights was launched at the opening ceremony of the 9th World Stroke Congress in Istanbul late last year. And this Bill of Rights is an important priority for the World Stroke Organization. These rights identify aspects of care that are important for all stroke survivors and caregivers from across the world. How will it help in Malaysia, where stroke is the third largest cause of death? Well, what is the Global Stroke Bill of Rights all about? Who was it developed by? Dr. Ramesh Sahadevan, consultant neurologist, is in the studio to explain to us. Welcome, Dr. Ramesh. How are you today?
Well, thanks, Meera. Thanks for having me on.
When did you think that, you know, this was something we needed to be involved in? I know it's a global stroke bill of rights, but we have so many areas of priority, really, Dr. Ramesh. But how will we benefit from being a part of this?
I think at the onset, what I'd say is that my sort of part in this whole Global Bill of Rights was just that I was a member of the audience at the World Stroke Congress when it was launched. And I was thinking to myself, my God, I think that's amazing. As to why it is we need to be a part of it, simply because it's a Global Bill of Rights. It's about stroke patients saying that we know what our condition is. We know what's involved in terms of the care. We need to now sort of band together and make sure that everyone knows what stroke is, what are the treatments available in terms of the acute treatment, as in I've had a stroke, what do I do immediately? And then, of course, the follow-up from that. So, unfortunately, stroke is one of those things where you have a lot of sequelae. There are lots of, you know, effects that you see 2 years, 5 years, 10 years after a stroke. And so all of that care comes in as well.
It's a journey, really.
It is a journey.
And it's not a legal document.
No, not at all.
Yep. So how do countries get involved in it?
So basically what it was that, and I had to actually write to the people who were behind it at the World Stroke Organization and say, look, I'm going to be giving an interview on this. Can you give me some background?
Mm-hmm.
And so the people from the World Stroke Organization, I spoke to someone in Australia, a lady by the name of Erin Lalo, and she put me in touch with some of her people as well. And they were the ones who actually gave me the information. So what it was that there were sort of separate documents from certain countries like the States and the UK and whatnot, where you had a similar sort of bill of rights for stroke patients. And then I think it just basically became such that, you know, stroke, as you said, is becoming more and more important.
Mm-hmm.
More and more people are, you know, suffering a stroke. 16 million people suffer a stroke every year. 1/3 of them die within that 1 year. So these are huge numbers. And so what it was then was that they decided, okay, we need something on a global scale. So as the World Stroke Organization, they felt that there had to be a document that sort of fit the organization as well.
How was it received in Istanbul?
Because it was
the reason I'm asking you is because when I was researching, there was very little about it. And you're right. Australia was the only one who had a good article on it, which shed a lot of light on what this Global Stroke Bill of Rights was all about.
To be very honest, you see, the thing is, stroke, it's not one of the sexy diseases. You know, unfortunately, there is a sort of spectrum of sexiness in terms of what disease you have as well.
Yeah.
You know, you have bragging rights if you have certain things. And if you say you have stroke, you're like, whatever. Go sit in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
I think that actually has a lot to do with it. The fact that you need to have people interested. You need to have members of the media and whatnot who are really willing to engage and say, okay, look, it's very interesting, this Global Bill of Rights for stroke. What's it about? And unfortunately, you don't really have that. You don't have people really interested. You know, it's unless and until someone's had a stroke that people start picking up and taking notice.
Mm-hmm. How was it received?
At the World Stroke Congress, very well. it was amazing to us to have a document that was basically produced by stroke survivors. So what they did was they actually got together a group of people with stroke from a few countries. Singapore was one of them. Unfortunately, Malaysia was not. And then they had a bigger group, I think about 10 countries or 12 countries. And what they did there was they had stroke survivors and their carers. And then they sort of built on that. So the setting up of the Global Bill of Rights actually started in Vienna in 2013. So that was on the periphery of another major stroke meeting, the World Congress of Neurology. And so they got these people together. And 1 year later in Istanbul, the document was ready. It was read out by a group of stroke survivors, right, in a variety of languages. The gentleman from Singapore actually read part of it out in Mandarin. Mm-hmm. And we were there to basically listen to them tell us that we've had strokes. We'd like to know more about it. We'd like to be ensured that we're going to get the best of care. And I think at the end of it was also a question of, we'd like for you to know more about it too, even though you're doctors and sitting almighty on high. And no, it's really true, because, you know, there were many sessions during the World Stroke Congress that involved stroke survivors and members of the public. And I'll never forget this. This lady from Israel spoke, and she said at the end of it, excuse me, you know, my last word is, all of you doctors, would you please listen to your patients? And I thought, my God, that's exactly what it is.
Why is there a big gap? Is there a big gap? What are doctors not listening to?
I think it's not a question of doctors not listening. I think it's just that we practice medicine in a certain way. We know that you've got these symptoms and therefore you've got this disease. I know from my training that this is how you treat it. And now, of course, we are in the age of evidence-based medicine, meaning that whatever treatment it is that I decide to use to treat your condition has to be based on good evidence. It has to be based on research. And I think we just tend to get very focused on that, that we forget that behind the stroke and the high blood pressure and the diabetes is a person who has suffered from this condition. More than that, there is a family that is attached to this person who are also going to be suffering the consequences of it. I think that's what we forget.
You said something about access to proper care. Are you saying that all around the world, stroke patients are not getting the proper care? They're not.
They're not.
Why Look, not?
Let's, okay. How do you treat a stroke? So you treat a stroke in certain conditions by giving them something called a thrombolytic agent. What is this? A stroke is something that essentially happens, well, 80% of the cases, if you have a blood vessel that is blocked off by a blood clot. So logically then, what do? You dissolve the clot. So that's what a thrombolytic agent does. Now, to be able to treat a stroke patient effectively using this thrombolytic agent, you have a time frame of 4.5 hours. Mm-hmm. So in many parts of the world, especially the developing world, patients are not able to avail themselves to this sort of treatment because they either don't recognize that they've had a stroke and they get to the hospital late, or they get to the hospital on time but the doctor who's treating them doesn't know anything about this treatment, or it's too expensive, or the infrastructure that they have in place will not support them using this sort of therapy. So you have a lot of parts of the world where stroke is not treated properly. It is not treated how it's meant to be treated. And that's, again, where the disparity comes in. Because if you speak to people from, say, Denmark, In Denmark, every major center is equipped to deal with a stroke in exactly the way that I'm talking to you about. And from the time that you enter the door and they think that you've had a stroke to the time that you get your thrombolytic agent, it's 30 minutes.
Wow. 30 minutes.
30 minutes.
That's super healthcare. Yep. Where does Malaysia stand in all of this?
Okay, so in Malaysia, there are a few centers that are able to deliver thrombolytic therapy. Unfortunately, it's more the exception than the norm. And again, why? Is it because there's a lack of interest? Not really. I think there are many people who are interested in wanting to get this across and start the service here for Malaysians. But it goes back to, do we have people enough who are trained? Do we have centers enough that have the expertise and the staff that are going to be able to do this? Do the people themselves know that this is what needs to be done? There are many factors that sort of work against. Many factors that work against, unfortunately. But hopefully with, you know, something like the Global Bill of Rights, if a patient now comes in and says, I've had a stroke, according to what I know, I'm supposed to get this treatment.
Right.
Why am I not?
But you were saying this thrombolytic agent is not available all over the country.
It is not available all over the country.
So should we be pushing for it to be, first of all, available all over the country?
I think so.
Do you think we have the people who will be able to administer?
I think where there's a will, there's a way.
So it's priorities. It's the will, as you said. Okay, we're discussing the Global Stroke Bill of Rights with Dr. Ramesh Sahadevan, consultant neurologist. If you have a question for him on strokes, send it through 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio. Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuri. In the studio with me, Dr. Ramesh Sahadevan, consultant neurologist. We're discussing the Global Stroke Bill of Rights, which was introduced in during the 9th World Stroke Congress in Istanbul late last year. Coincidentally, Dr. Ramesh happens to be there. How come you were there and the Malaysian representatives were not there?
I was.
I mean, were we a part of this?
We were a part of this. And actually, I managed to speak to some of the other representatives from stroke organizations. So not really doctors, but people who've themselves had strokes and survived. And actually, they had very good things to say about the Malaysian chapter. So the Malaysian chapter of this is something called NASAM, National Association for Stroke. They do very good work. Mm-hmm. But I guess, you know, look, it's not cheap to go to one of these things.
That's right.
You know, it's expensive. Perhaps it was cost, perhaps it was, you know, not being able to get people who were sort of committed to go to it. But there definitely were other Malaysians as well, Malaysian doctors. I think there were about 6 or 7 of us, mm-hmm. Malaysian doctors were there. I was there because we were presenting some research that we'd done. My colleagues and I think we had 2 or 3 posters up. And it always is good to go to these things because you learn the latest in terms of what's going on in the world of stroke. You get to network, you get to catch up.
Of course. And say I have symptoms of a stroke and I go to the nearest, and you're talking about it being available only in certain government hospitals. Let's not talk about private hospitals. Is it definitely available in private hospitals?
Even amongst the private hospitals, it's not available in all private hospitals.
Okay.
In a private setup or government setup, what is important is that you need to have a healthcare practitioner who is comfortable with the use of a thrombolytic agent. But let's go back to sort of what you were asking me in terms of the signs of stroke.
Yeah.
So the Americans came up with something called the FAST acronym. So FAST is F for face. Do you have, does the person whom you think is having a stroke have asymmetry of the face? Ask them to smile and look to see if their face looks a little skewed. A for arm. So ask them to lift both their arms up Are they totally unable to lift their arm up on one side? Or if they have been able to lift their arm up, is it sort of drifting down over a 10-second period? S is for speech. Is their speech slurred? Or are they not able to speak at all? Or is everything coming out garbled? So you're asking them very sensible questions and whatnot, and you know everything's just sort of coming out garbled. So if any one of these are present, then it's T, time to act. So that's a very quick acronym that's being used in many parts of the West to sort of identify or rather teach the general populace. This is what the signs of stroke are. Again, if any of these are present, immediately to the hospital. Okay. Time to act.
And not all hospitals, as you said, has a thrombolytic agent. So what are the options to treat?
The treatment for stroke used to be basically, you've come in with a stroke, we're going to watch you now. Make sure that your blood pressure is controlled, make sure that your diabetes is controlled. Get a scan done to make sure that this isn't a bleeding stroke, which is what happens in about 20% of cases, and then start you on the right treatment. After a day or two, we'll make sure that you're able to swallow properly. If you're not able to swallow properly, it means that we've got to put a tube into your nose, because if you then try to swallow, whatever you swallow is going to end up in your lung, and you're going to get what we call aspiration pneumonia. And then the physio comes in, and the speech and language pathology and all of these things start off as well. And in about 3 to 5 days, hopefully, we're able to send you home.
So we allow the stroke to take its course?
By the time patients come in, the stroke is basically what we call completed. Because the brain being the brain, after 5 minutes of not getting blood supply, that part of the brain is not going to be functioning.
Right.
So,
okay.
Yep.
So hence the problem. Is there a consistency on how stroke patients are being treated around the world?
Yes, there is. So it goes back to the thrombolytic therapy that I was talking to you about just now. So this is considered standard of care. So if you are, for instance, it's basically like this. If you were to have appendicitis in any part of the world, then your standard therapy would be to get your appendix taken out. If you've had a stroke, and if you fit into the correct sort of group, you tick all of the boxes, and there's nothing that's going to contraindicate me giving you a thrombolytic agent, then thrombolysis is the standard of care that you should expect. In terms of the rest of it, like controlling of blood pressure, controlling of blood sugar, the good thing is that with the globalized world, doctors everywhere sort of speak the same language. So regardless of whether you've had a stroke in the US or whether you're in some part of Africa or here in Malaysia, what is done for you if you've had a stroke should be pretty much the same. The level of care, the depth of care may be a little different. And of course, you know, the expertise and the infrastructure that sort of like contributes towards your care is definitely going to be different as well. But as I said, we all speak the same language.
You mentioned earlier about how we should go, if you are indeed having a stroke, you should be going to a healthcare practitioner and saying, I am entitled to proper care, or, you know, I want to be treated for this, right? But it's incapacitating sometimes for stroke patients. I mean, how do you voice your rights?
Hopefully, I guess that's where something like the Global Bill of Rights comes in. Because then the Global Bill of Rights is what speaks for you. And, you know, the thing, of course, is that even though you've had a stroke, you still have those around you who are going to be able to speak up for you as well. And family then, of course, would, you know, that there's something that they should be able to fall back on. And again, I guess that's where something like the Global Bill of Rights comes in.
Women with stroke often do not receive comparable care to men with stroke. Why is that?
I think that's, I don't know which aspects of it they sort of looked at when they drafted that. Now, look, honestly, I can tell you that here in Malaysia, I don't think you're going to have the sort of differential care for women and men. Everyone gets an equal amount of care. But I think there are things that perhaps, I wouldn't say enable, but would make it easier for a woman to sort of like slip through the holes. So for instance, if you've got a lady who is sole carer for her family, she's had the signs of stroke and she's going to fob it off and say, look, I can handle this. It's no big deal. And so they tend to come to us late. Or you have people who are in a similar situation, who've had a stroke, who've been admitted, and who tell us that, look, I have to go home because there's no one at home taking care of my children. So I think that's the reason, perhaps, that you'd have a sort of a differential level of care for men versus women. But I guess that's also because I think women are the stronger sex.
He's admitted it on air.
I have admitted it on
air. And I have it on record.
Yes, yes. No photographs, please, just in case. You know, I get lynched as I leave.
In this country, we also have this challenge of urban versus rural.
Yep, definitely.
How would a Global Stroke Bill of Rights help, you know, reduce the disparity in terms of access to healthcare?
I think that this provides a platform for people who've had a stroke, for their families, to actually take to policymakers and those in power and say, look, there's this document that has been sort of like drawn up. And now what are you going to do about it? Is this something that's going to see change in the short term? No. If you're talking about how these sorts of documents make a change, it is definitely going to be long term. And look, I think even the Ministry of Health is very interested in improving stroke care and making sure that, you know, everyone gets adequate stroke care, but it's going to take time.
What role do you think policymakers can play in providing?
Oh, they have an immense role, unfortunately. I don't envy them. Because, you know, the thing is that I'm here speaking as someone who has an interest in stroke. I'm a neurologist. I have an interest in stroke. And I can wax lyrical about how much should be done and whom it should be done for and whatnot. But I think the important thing to remember is that there are 100 other conditions.
Exactly.
You know, all of which also require the attention. And I think the thing to remember is that resources are finite. There's only so much money that the government has. There's only so much infrastructure that they're going to be able to provide. There's only so much in terms of doctors with the skill. And it's not just doctors. You need the nurses. You need all of the other paramedical staff. I mean, look, if you just consider stroke, I need physiotherapists. I need occupational therapists. I need speech and language pathologists. I'm very lucky where I work in UKM Medical Center because we have all of these facilities available. But we are the exception rather than the norm.
And what about the workplace? Can we advocate from the workplace or be a part of this Global Stroke Bill of Rights?
Oh, I hope so. I mean, I hope that with this sort of information coming out, someone's actually going to say, yeah, why don't we do a stroke awareness campaign amongst our staff? Use the FAST acronym. We actually have a Malay acronym that we sort of invented in UKM called MATA, based on the FAST thing as well. And so, yeah, you know, if officers are going to say, okay, let's just do Stroke Awareness Day, and we're going to talk about the signs of stroke, and we're going to talk about what your risk of stroke is based on your risk factor profile and your health profile, your family history, and the rest. excellent.
What do you think Malaysians don't understand about strokes?
I think the first thing is that people sort of miss the connection between having conditions like high blood pressure and diabetes, high cholesterol, smoking, and making that connection and saying that, okay, if I have these conditions, my risk of stroke is higher. And the interesting thing, of course, is that not only is your risk of stroke higher, your risk of a heart attack is higher as well. And interestingly, so is your risk of cognitive disorders. So if you have high blood pressure and diabetes, you're at a higher risk of developing dementia as well. The second thing, of course, would be that recognition of the signs of stroke and understanding that if I've had a stroke, it's not just a question, oh, I've just had a stroke. No big deal. It's a very big deal.
Why?
Because it's something that can be treated. If you've had what they call a minor stroke, it's actually a warning sign that you might be in for a bigger stroke if you don't take care of those things that have led you to have the stroke in the first place. And if, for instance, your stroke is fairly major, you want to make sure that you get the proper form of treatment and that you're prepared for the consequences of having had a major stroke.
What are the consequences? I think that's something we don't follow up with. You know, we know somebody's had a stroke. Nobody really calls on them to check on how they're progressing after that. And it's a long journey. It's almost, the journey almost just begins at that point.
I think the first thing is that you recognize that you've had a stroke because you're at risk. So then what comes in is what we call secondary prevention, meaning that you want to make sure that your blood pressure and your diabetes, your cholesterol levels and all that are taken care of. If you're smoking, stop smoking. If you have a condition called atrial fibrillation, where you have an irregular heartbeat, you should be on a specific type of medication that reduces your risk by thinning your blood. So it's an oral anticoagulant. So these are sorts of the medical measures that would be required to prevent you from having another stroke. And then, of course, there's the sequelae. So you've had a stroke. One side of your body is not working as well as it should. The severity of it could be from a mild numbness to total lack of movement on that side. So that's when all of your physiotherapy and occupational therapy and all of these things come in. Now, one aspect of stroke care or the consequences of a stroke that most often overlooked are actually the psychological signs or psychological burden of having had a stroke. So you have a lot of people who actually develop depression, and that tends to be sort of fobbed off. 10 years down the line, if you've had, say, a single stroke, the risk of you developing cognitive dysfunction or dementia is 1 in 10. If you've had more than one stroke, it's 1 in 3. So that's a major part of, you know, sort of like having had a stroke, which needs to be looked at.
Yeah, I'm just...
It's not a very pleasant topic of conversation.
No,
I know.
But,
sort
but,
of
you know...
Fits in with a Monday, I guess.
And in a way... But when you have somebody laying it out in front of you, it's hard to ignore it, right? It's hitting me like a ton of bricks. I mean, do you think we're far away from fulfilling all the criteria for the Bill of Rights?
If there is no will, if there is no impetus to actually sort of get working on all of those points, we'll never reach it. We will never reach it.
Your message on why Malaysians should embrace the Global Stroke Bill of Rights.
We don't lead very healthy lifestyles here in Malaysia. We are one of the most obese countries in Southeast Asia.
We are the.
We are the. Yes, thank you. And so, you know, the thing is that the risk of stroke is very high. This is something that we all of us need to know about. And I think this Global Bill of Rights puts everything very clearly. It gives you the gist of what you need to know and what needs to be done. And I would think that for us not to embrace it, for us not to look at it, would have very dire consequences.
So I suppose in this country, if we want to get involved, we can contact the National Stroke Association of Malaysia, NASAM?
I think NASAM would be a good sort of body to get in touch with. Look, you know, as I said, it's a globalized world. Get onto the World Stroke Organization website. Google Global Bill of Rights for Stroke. There are many ways that, you know, you'd be able to get hold of this document. Have a look at it.
Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Dr. Ramesh Sahadevan, consultant neurologist on the Global Stroke Bill of Rights on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.